This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com. This episode of Know-How is brought to you by iFixit, the free online repair manual for everything. Before you start your next build or fix, head over to iFixit.com/TWiT to snag the fully loaded Pro Tech Toolkit for only $59.95. And check out their array of high-quality parts, tools, and guides.
Today on Know-How,
PGP
and cleaning out your PC. Welcome to Know How. This is the show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I'm your host, Brian Burnett.
And I'm Nathan Olivares-Giles.
And today we are going to show you, well, what PGP is and why you should clean out your PC. But before we get to that knowledge bomb that we'll be dropping on the audience, I would just like to thank our TD, the one and only Burke McQuinn, for helping us out today to do this episode.
You know him, you love him from Burke Chat, and now he's here rocking with us.
You can chime in if you want, Burke, if you feel comfortable.
Nothing.
No. Nope.
Well, see, this is the thing. Burke Chat happens on cards. I don't know if Burke's voice has ever been on Twitch show. Do you know? Has that ever happened?
Only as like a distant yelling, like in the background. Like,
just a rah, 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 rah in the background?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Well, nonetheless, trust us. Burke is back there, whether you believe it or not. Burke's there. Take a word for it.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I guess we should get into it. So we were going back and forth about this project.
Yeah.
PGP, which stands for Pretty Good Protection.
Pretty Good Privacy.
Oh, Pretty Good Privacy. Okay.
So it's basically like an open encryption standard, and it's set up for people to be able to send correspondence back and forth that is encrypted. Now, The way that it works, basically, let's break this down. A lot of different services and apps use encryption. Google uses encryption for your Gmail messages while they're in transit.
Right.
But it decrypts those messages while it's on their servers so that they can figure out, you know, what you're talking about, so they can target ads to you, so they can offer, you know, services like predictive responses in Gmail, so they can offer, you know, a conversation that you can have with their assistant in their chat apps.
Yeah, one of the things that I do appreciate of that system is if I order something on Amazon, then I'll get push notifications that your order has shipped through like the Google Now assistant stuff.
Yeah. There are other, you know, different companies have different takes on this. Apple encrypts all of their message in iMessage, so it's never decrypted, so Apple never sees what you have, unlike Google. There's different varying levels of privacy. WhatsApp has full encryption.
Right, we talked about Signal a few episodes back.
Yeah. So Signal and WhatsApp use the same encryption technology, and that's open sourced as well. And the reason why you might want to go with an open sourced encryption technology is because basically the entire world has access to how it works, and they are continually trying to break it and make it better. So it's kind of a group project with the entire planet, so to speak, whereas something like iMessage uses Apple's proprietary encryption technology, and that's their own thing. So there's different approaches to these things. Neither, you know, you can't really say, oh, this one's better than that one or whatever, but just kind of know what you're getting into. Now, all that being said, why would you want to use something like PGP? The reason why you might want to say send private correspondence through PGP versus iMessage or versus WhatsApp or versus, you know, something else that offers what's called end-to-end encryption, so it's encrypted along the entire way and not visible to the service provider, is for an even greater level of privacy. So if you and I are, you know, conversing back and forth in a service that is encrypted end-to-end, we still know who each other are. We can still identify one another. You know, we can screenshot stuff. There's still ways to trace that back. What PGP offers, basically, is an opportunity for me to create, basically, what are called a set of keys so that I can, you know, anyone in the world can send me a private message encrypted with their keys, and only those two people can, if they have each other's encryption keys,
right,
can see the message that's being sent back and forth. The benefit of this is, say that, you know, maybe I'm living in a country with an impressive government and I want to get some information out there. Maybe I'm working in a company and they're doing, or a government agency and they're doing bad things, mm-hmm, and I want to share that with, you know, regulators or journalists or, you know, whatever it might be, whatever the situation is. Or maybe you just really care about your privacy and you're, yeah, still corresponding with friends. Nonetheless, I can, say, create an account tied to, like, an email address that isn't tied to my name. I can use a fake name. I can do all those things. I can identify myself or not. It's basically fully up to you how much you identify yourself or not in this process. You can also, and we'll go through this process, you can also set some of these things to expire after a while, like the privacy settings and the PGP keys and all these things. A lot of journalists have PGP keys set up so that people can message them confidentially as well. Mm-hmm. So that's basically kind of the justification, is it's one of the most secure and private ways to correspond, whether you want to be known or not.
Right, and available as a lot of the apps that we use, like Signal and,
yeah,
and like iMessage or whatever that you can use, email is still the most basic, easy access way to send information, yeah, to somebody,
yep,
without like a lot. You don't have to have a phone. You just have to have access to a computer.
Yeah.
Which in a lot of places, you know, that might be your only way of connecting on the internet.
Exactly. Email is still kind of, email won't die as much as people might want it to, as much,
yeah,
as people might want it to go away or circumvent it. Mm-hmm. It's still so core to so much of what we do on the internet, especially in business capacities, especially in educational institutions, and especially in government, all these different places that really, really matter to how our world works. Now, that being said, a lot of people haven't embraced PGP because it's kind of tough to set up.
Right.
You have to basically like create this set of keys, and it's intimidating, and what does that mean, and how do I share that with people, and all those things.
Mm-hmm.
One of our producers here, Jerry, he actually clued me into a Chrome extension that I'm kind of sad to say I didn't know about previously, but it's quite popular. It's called Mailvelope, and it's actually a Google Chrome extension, and tried a few different services in PGP. I've spoken with some friends who are reporters and are encryption experts, and Mailvelope is the easiest tool that I've seen so far to set this up and to use it.
Okay, cool. Well, let's take a look and see how it works.
Yeah, so let me walk you guys through this. So basically, if you go, if you're using the Chrome web browser, which is the most popular web browser out there, so you very likely already are, but if you're not, this might be a good reason to give it a shot.
Mm-hmm.
You add the Mailvelope extension inside of the Google Chrome Web Store, and it's spelled Mailvelope.
Mailvelope. Pretty straightforward. Yeah.
Pretty straightforward. So you add the extension, and then once you do that, I've already actually created a couple keys, and I've added some people here. So the first thing you want to do is generate your PGP keys. So you can kind of think of this as an address. If I share my PGP key to you personally, or maybe I put it on my Twitter account so it's public and anyone can message me,
right,
that basically gives people, if they're using a encryption, a PGP message, a place to send it. And if they're using PGP and I'm using it, it'll get routed to me.
Okay. I'll
be the only one who can decrypt that because I have a corresponding second set of keys that I only have access to.
Okay, and you're not limited to just having one key. Like,
yeah,
you can
have multiple. Actually, we'll look for Leo in this service Mailvelope. He has like a dozen of them set up, which is pretty great. But yeah, you can set this up. You can set however many you'd like.
Okay.
But basically, it's a public address so people can route stuff to you. But it doesn't mean that people will have access to it because it's only one half of the equation.
Okay.
I have my private key on the other side to decrypt the message. So the first public key that gets sent out to everybody, if you want it to be shared on social networks, whatever, you want to add it into your email signature, you can do these sorts of things, then that's just a routing address, so to speak.
Okay.
That other second side is basically me opening my mailbox and bringing it into my home or whatever, if you want to use that analogy and take
right.
it another step further. That being said, it's password protected because these keys are just kind of numbers and letters and it's not easy to remember. So
right.
when you create these things, you're going to have to remember what your password is or else you won't have access to it. And if you ever want to revoke access to that key and you don't have your password, you're pretty much SOL.
Okay.
It's like not going to happen. So it's pretty important to remember that. And just like with any other password, we've spoken about this in a lot of other episodes, and I know Padre and Leo and everyone's kind of hit these notes, but don't make your password to this the same as all of your other services. Make
right.
sure you have unique and specific passwords because, you know, if your password to this is the same as, you know, like Gmail, Facebook, iTunes, every single other thing you have, Amazon, whatever.
That's already a bad practice.
Bad practice. Yeah. You're asking for someone to take advantage of your your bad choice.
You could use a password manager, generate a password, and then just save it in that. Right?
That could be an option as well. That could be an option as well. And we do advocate here overall for the use of password managers and kind of recommend that if you want to give that a shot. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to actually set up. I created a email account called twittest007 at outlook.com, and I'm going to create a PGP key associated with this email account. So that's Microsoft Outlook. That's not encrypted end-to-end. They serve ads in there and all these sorts of things. So the first thing I'll do, since it's 007, I'll put my name down as James Bond. Obviously, my name is not James Bond. Not that cool, but nonetheless, there it is.
This is a good example.
Yeah, and I'll put down my email address as twittest007@outlook.com. And I'm going to click this advanced button here. I'm going to set this this PGP key to expire. Let's do it like next Monday, so to speak. So it's going to be short term. I'm not going to have this last forever. If you don't want to have an expiration date, if you say, hey, you know what? I want to have one PGP key for the rest of my life. Yeah. That's cool. That totally works. But if you want to use something temporary, let's say maybe you're in one of those situations where you are sharing sensitive information. Mm-hmm. It might be something that could put you at risk professionally, even put you at risk for your life. You might not want these things to exist forever.
Right.
That's totally fine. Or maybe you just don't want the hassle of having to remember that password all the time.
Yeah.
That totally works too. Whatever your reasons, decide whether or not it's temporary for you or not.
Like the Snapchat version of like an email.
Kind of. Yeah, there's a lot of things sliding
an expiration
here.
On it.
Yeah. All right, so you're going to, like I said, you're going to need to create a password that you can remember that is secure for your access to that second key that is just yours to decrypt any messages you get sent, right?
Okay, that makes sense.
So I created the password here, and I am checking this box to upload my public key to the Mailvelope key server. This is something you can undo or you can delete at any moment that you want. You don't have to do this, but basically what that does is it uploads your public key, not the one that you have that's password protected, but the one that is my routing address that can get anyone to send me an encrypted message using this technology. That can be uploaded to a public server. Now, there are a few different public servers, and these services tie into other public servers. So there's some at MIT and all these things.
Okay.
But this, again, this is a shared community. It's open source stuff. It's kind of like a shared build community thing. So if you want people to find you, let's say you're a journalist, or maybe you have a lot of friends who are doing these sorts of things, or whatever your reason might be to have a public key. You want people to find you, to send you things confidentially,
right?
Then this is a good idea to do. If you're on that other side and you don't want people to know that you have a public key out there, you can keep that secret. Again, you can use your real name or not. I'm using James Bond. Clearly, my name is not James Bond. So when people go and search for this in James Bond, for the next 3 days, they'll be able to find it.
Right.
But if not, after that point, it'll disappear.
Cool. Okay.
So I've got that all set up. I've got my email address in there. I've got my name. This time it's fake.
Mr. Bond.
I've got my expiration date set. I've got my password and it matches. And so now I'm going to generate these keys. So as you can see, the key generation is happening. It might take a little while depending on, all sorts of different factors. Internet connection and how their servers on their end are working. But
do you expect me to generate a key? No, I expect you to die.
All right. Yes, and hopefully not during the episode.
Yeah, no.
After we get this one
done. Yeah, when we're done. Yeah.
Yeah, so it says here, success, new key generated and imported into Keyring. So that a key has been generated. Now what I'll do is I will show you. I'll go to display keys here, and you can see different things. I created the other day one by the name of Peter Parker tied to my work Twit email address, nathan@twit.tv. Now we have my James Bond joint here, and I was corresponding with Jerry, and you can see that there as well. So now I have my keys, and I say, okay, great, I've got my stuff. Now I actually want to send an encrypted message, right? So once you have that set up with this extension, this is one of the reasons why this extension is so great and makes it so easy, is All right, so the next thing you want to do is write an email, and you want to encrypt that email with your PGP key using the Mailvelope extension. So I'm going into my Outlook account that I've set up to specifically test this thing. Don't email this address because I won't answer, but nonetheless, setting this up, I'm just going to – I'll send it to Jerry. I'll say, Jerry, this is a PGP test, Nate. And with the extension in place, one of the great things is when you go to your message you see this little pop-up here. You see this like little notepad?
Yeah.
Well, you click that, and then that opens up a new message. And I say, okay, here is my message. Mm-hmm. That looks good. I'm going to send that to Jerry, cool. who I've already added his key. I've searched for that, and I'll show you how to do that after this.
Okay.
And now I want to say encrypt. And so you can see this all looks like gobbledygook, right?
Yeah.
I just wrote it in there. You know, hey, Jerry, this is a PGP test, Nate. And now it looks, now it's, what is that? I can't read that. Well, what that is that is basically the encrypted version of my message.
Okay.
And so.
You just send that?
Exactly. If anybody were to intercept this, if someone hacked into my account, they wouldn't be able to read this because it's encrypted. So if they got a hold of this, they wouldn't be able to tell what it is or anything like that, who it's from, all these sorts of things. So then I hit send, and that will send this message. Out to Jerry.
Cool.
Actually, let me put that in here.
So, and then Jerry would have the extension on his laptop so that he could then use that to decrypt it?
Yeah, exactly.
Envelope.
Yeah, so I send this message and then it gets sent to Jerry, and Jerry won't be able to read it unless he has my public PGP key.
Okay.
So he can, you know, he sees my email address and he says, okay, you know, who's that? And then he can search for my email address. If I shared it publicly, he'd be able to find it and add me and then decrypt it.
Okay.
And if not, then I would have to send it to him directly. So let me show you how to find someone on this service. Basically, in Mailvelope, you go to the Import Keys tab over here, and then you look for someone either by their name or their email address or by what's called a key ID, which sometimes people will share on there as well. It's not the full PGP key, but it's a way to find people, and you might see that. You might see PGP colon, and then it's kind of like a maybe like a dozen numbers and letters or something.
Yeah.
That's what that key ID is.
Okay, okay.
So let's look for Leo. So we'll look for Leo Laporte, and we'll search that. And then as you can see, Leo has a lot of PGP keys set up here.
Could this be other people who have the same name too? But I mean, it's probably our Leo.
Yeah, theoretically, there could be multiple Leos out there. I actually talked with Leo about this already, and he told me he had something like 12 to 15 different keys set up.
Sounds like Leo.
Yeah, so it just kind of depends. And then what you do is you click on one of those blue links, and then it shows you their PGP key here. So all this garbled up text, that's the actual PGP key.
Wow.
And then you see this blue key here that pops up. I got my green little plus button. I hit it. And then that has imported that key from Leo into the Mailvelope extension for me.
Okay.
So now we go back to display keys, and I see all these different options here. I see here's Leo Laporte. I see Jerry Wagley. I see my James Bond account. I see my Peter Parker account.
Okay.
So that's a way to find someone. Again, this is stuff that's shared publicly out there.
Right.
And I'm not sharing anything Leo doesn't want to see because he publicly allowed that information to be out there. Anyone can go and find that. But now if I want to send private correspondence to Jerry or to Leo or to my other account, I can do that using this app. Now, let's say that I get a message from someone that maybe I don't know or maybe someone that I do. So I got Anthony, who's one of our producers here. He sent me a message using PGP, and then he added his key ID into the signature of his email address.
Okay.
The reason why he would do that, and this is the key ID again, is just a way to find his public key, not sharing anything private that's private to him, is basically if he sends me this message or to anyone else and it's encrypted with PGP, it allows them to basically decrypt it without having to say, hey, Anthony, I saw you sent me that. It's encrypted with PGP. Like, what's your public key, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so this extension is smart enough to know that Anthony sent that to me, and it recognizes that in the signature of that email, his key ID is there. So it went out, it got his public key, and now it will decrypt it for me. So you see here on my screen, it shows up this little envelope with like the little wax stamp in the back to kind of keep things sealed.
Yeah.
I tap that, and then it
and now the seal has been broken.
The seal's been broken. It's unencrypted for me to see. Okay. I'm the only one who can see it because of that decryption. And it says here, signed with an unknown key. It's like, well, you haven't added Anthony to your key list.
I see.
You want to do that or not. But basically, it allows me to get access to that because Anthony gave me all the pieces I need. He gave me access to his public key.
Right.
He gave me his message. And Mailvelope does the rest.
Okay, okay. So the whole... Yeah, I guess payload or the file
yeah.
that got sent to you has been encrypted, and then you're decrypting it on your end because of the information that Anthony sent along.
Yep, you
okay.
got it.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So again, you know, there are a lot of different options out there to use PGP. There are some Mac apps, there's some Windows apps, there's
yeah.
like online services. This is the one that I found that has been the easiest. In fact, I've tried to set stuff up earlier this week. I actually generated some keys and was unable to figure out like why I was getting it wrong. This is literally the easiest thing that I found. It's really fantastic. And highly recommend it if you're trying to use this. So
okay.
That's Mailvelope. And then, you know, if you want to, like, set up more keys, if you want to import more keys, it's super easy. You just go back to Mailvelope and you can hit setup. You can do all those things. And then it also allows you to encrypt attachments as well. So let's say I want to send a message, but I also want to send a photo, or I
right.
want to send a map, or I want to send a PDF of a public document, or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Then you can do that here, and you can encrypt that file and not just text as well. Now, again, you know, we're talking about it in all sorts of different social and technology contexts. It might just be friends talking with one another, and you want to keep that private, but it might be that situation where it's vital information. Social good, you know, life or death sort of situations.
Right.
And so you might actually need a PDF or some sort of proof or some sort of photo or whatever it mm-hmm. might be. This allows you to do that as well. So whatever you are trying to share, whatever it is that you need to do, Mailvelope is pretty flexible in those ways. Now, there are other apps that will do more. There are other apps that might be more capable, but this one is by far the easiest to use. And if you're trying to share something quick and easily, Mailvelope's great.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great way of getting into it. And then if you feel like PGP is the way that you want to continue sending email, maybe you can figure out other ways that are a little bit higher level or something. But like, I don't use PGP. I should. My understanding of email is that if you send anything out, generally it's like the postcard of the internet.
It's
you know,
yeah.
like if you sent a postcard in real life, there is a you know, chance that somebody will look at that and be
yeah.
able to read it because there's nothing hiding it.
Exactly.
It's not in an envelope.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, the way to think about that, postcard's a great analogy. Basically, whether it's a text message or an email, you're sending little packets of data out, you know, over someone else's pipes or someone else's wireless network or whatever. And there's lots of opportunities along the way to intercept that data and then, you know, look into it, read it, see what it, see what it's doing. These are real situations. I mean, you know, we've heard so much over the last few years with all the Snowden disclosures and all this stuff on different government agencies looking at things. And, you know, sometimes there are genuine reasons for that. Sometimes it's straight up snoopy and invasive and not
right.
so great. Whatever your reason for using encryption or wanting privacy, that's up to you, but here is a great option to, like you said, try it out, get familiar with it, see if it's for you, and then if you want to take that next step, you can go further and all those sorts of things. But it's I think it's the place to start if you want to use PGP.
Awesome. No, I think that's a great introductory to it, and now I kind of have a better grasp of how it works. So thanks for bringing that on.
Yeah, definitely. My pleasure.
Well, before we get to how you should clean out your filthy, filthy PC, we're going to take a break for these messages.
We'll be back with more know-how in a moment. But before we do, can I remind you about our sponsor, iFixit? We love iFixit. I personally love iFixit. I've known Kyle Weens and his team for years. They started really to be the repair manual for everything. And they've been tearing down. You know, you see there's teardowns, right? Anytime something new comes out, the new iPhone, a new tablet, they take it apart, figure out what's in it, create a video so you can see, a website so you can see, create a repair manual. And in some cases, companies don't offer repair manuals to us, so we have to do it ourselves. iFixit does a great job. They'll even provide parts and tools, and I love them. If you are looking for a gift for the geek in your life, check out the ProTech Toolkit, and maybe the geek in your life is you. We have three, because I keep putting them somewhere, so I want to have enough in the house so you can always find one. They are so awesome. The iFixit ProTech Toolkit is only $59.95. It's very affordable. It's got both beauty and brawn, high-quality steel bits, tools tough enough to handle any repair or mod you throw at them. And it has all the hard-to-find bits, and that's really awesome. Because there's always, you know, nowadays all the electronics companies, they don't use standard Phillips screws or flatheads. They always got something special going on, the pentalobes or the Torx or whatever. You get them all with the iFixit. It's got a ProTek tool. It's 64 bits. The 64-bit driver kit has bits for any kind of, let me show you, any kind of DIY repair. You get all the bits you need for just about any DIY repair. You get a protective case that keeps it all organized. And by the way, it's magnetized, so you can open up, flip it over. The bits don't fall out. In fact, it's held in place by a magnetic mat that is perfect to double as a place to hold the little screws and components. See that mat? It's very handy. You also get, besides the bits, the swivel top magnetic precision driver. You just slot those bits right into it. Boom. They're held by magnets, so there's no tightening or anything. You just put them in. You get a flex extension, which is also magnetic, and that lets you get around corners to hard-to-reach screws. You get the spudger, see the plastic opening tools, the picks, safely poke and pry with. You even get a suction cup with a fancy new handle. That's great for removing display assemblies. iFixit's own rubber-handled Jimmy pry tool and a set of metal spudgers and the ESD-safe tweezers. See those? Those are so handy. And a safety strap, because you don't want to zap your electronics. ESD safety strap in the kit as well. iFixit tools are backed by iFixit's lifetime warranty. You don't need to buy something to get their free repair resources. They're always there. 25,000 free repair guides at iFixit.com. But give them a little thank you. See that? Did you love that? Did you see that? The suction cup? That's awesome. Give them a little thank you by picking up the ProTek toolkit. In fact, get several. Because I tell you what, they're a great gift for the geeks in your life. We gave them to our hosts last Christmas. iFixit, and they loved them. iFixit.com/twit. Get the fully loaded ProTek toolkit, just $59.95 from iFixit.com/twit. And we thank iFixit for their support of our show.
And we're back. So, Nate, this is something that it's kind of one of my OCD habits to check on my PC at least once a year because, you know, if a PC is just sitting there running, not hard, but over time, it will collect dust. There's a lot of gunk that gets caught inside of it.
Totally. You vacuum your floor, I hope. You mop your floors, I hope.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while, you'll wash your car and even vacuum that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if this is in your home, that stuff's going to get dusty too. There's going to be little, you know. So, yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yes. Especially if we're talking about our personal computers, like if you set it on the floor, chances are it's going to suck up more dust.
Yeah.
I like to have them under my desk because they're quieter down there. But if you have it on top of your desk, there's a little bit less chance that it'll suck up corgi hair, which is my problem that I have.
Yeah.
But if you start the video, Burke... So I took the opportunity to clean out my PC, and your first reaction might be to like take a vacuum or something to your PC, which is totally not a good idea. You can create a static charge, which will destroy some of your components.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
No, but as you can see, like inside my PC is pretty dusty. I haven't cleaned it in about a year. A lot of the dust is going to collect around fans and edges like that, and if you have a filter Like, my case comes with a filter that slides into the front, so that catches a lot of it.
Thank God that that's there, because everything else would be worse, right?
I mean, it would be worse. Like, it's already kind of bad in there.
It's like that dryer sheet, moldy, whatever.
Oh, yeah, totally. The lint collector. But what you're going to need is compressed air cans. I have a couple of them because I switch back and forth. I needed a lot of compressed air for the amount of dust I had in there. But what I like to do when I first start cleaning out the PC is definitely go to a well-ventilated area. So I'm doing this outside. I remove the hard drives, remove the disk drive, because if I'm using compressed air, I don't want a lot of that stuff getting into the hard drive should be safe, but I don't want dust getting into my disk drive.
Better safe than sorry.
Exactly. And so then I just kind of go around with the compressed air, try and push out as much of the dust with that as I can. You can't get everything. resist the urge to use a wet, like a wet towel or something like that.
So don't use like diaper wipes or something?
Don't use diaper wipes. You can use rubbing alcohol if you want to do that. I had on hand one of the little, hand wipes, alcohol on it. You can use that because that'll evaporate, but don't use water. That's bad for electronics. That's pretty basic. But once you start to wipe down the fan edges, kind of get the dust off the bottom, spray some of the dust out of the way, and you kind of get it clean, that's the opportunity, at least for me, to start organizing my wires again. Because I think I've upgraded this computer a couple of times, and I, when I did that, I would pull things apart, and then I didn't really put it back the way that it should have because I got kind of lazy.
Yeah, I saw you had some bread ties in there to kind of keep wires bundled together.
Exactly. Zip ties are your friends. So by the end of it, if you do it right, you can use as few zip ties as you can, but like get it to look clean. And then by the end of me cleaning it, I noticed about 10 degrees Fahrenheit difference from just idle.
Wow.
So pretty big difference. Like I think I was idling around 100 degrees, and then I dropped it to about, it will idle now around 80, 85.
And so I would imagine that would help with performance and speed and just kind of make your machine overall peppier, and then probably help it last longer too, right?
Yes, because heat will kill components. Like it'll kill hard drives, it'll kill a graphics card, CPU and stuff. Like you may have seen that video. Like I have a softball. I call it the softball heat sink on my CPU, and that's because I do some light overclocking on it, which generates more heat. But that's what will kill components. And we are in the summer months right now, and if your PC is kind of running crummy or it sporadically crashes or something, it might be overheating. That might be the issue. So definitely open it up and take a look. And actually, one of our know-it-alls in the G+ group reported that something might have been living inside of his PC.
Do we have photos of this?
Yeah. If you open up the link, Burke, Jason Perry on the G+ shared what was inside of his PC.
What is that?
It looks like something was nesting in there. That looks definitely like a rat or a mouse was grabbing material and bringing it into the PC.
It's like a teddy bear exploded in there or something. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, the PC definitely didn't come like that.
No.
So, and that is a great way of a fire getting started, too. So,
can you imagine that? Burning down your apartment or home or something?
Yes.
No, we don't want to do that. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So regular cleaning out of your PC is a good thing to do. I use it as an opportunity to organize my cables and stuff after I'm done with it.
And I got to give you props, man. It looked great. Like, you had all your cables bundled together. There wasn't a bunch of loose stuff. Well, like, looking pretty streamlined there.
As much as it scratches my OCD itch and aesthetically, I like it when all the cables are lined up and everything. It helps with flow, too, airflow. Like,
good point.
If you imagine air as a fluidic kind of material instead of just like air, like you imagine water, if it was water or something like that.
Everywhere that there's not something that you can see, air is there.
Well,
so it's filling up all those spaces.
It's filling up all those spaces, and you want to clear those areas. So if there's a bunch of cables blocking the front of your CPU fan, or it's like a bunch of cables laying on top of your hard drives, that's just space that air can't pass over and clear the heat away.
It makes it harder for air to navigate and to move through your PC. You want air to flow, using the fluid analogy.
So like by the end of when I cleaned my PC, it was actually quieter too, because the fans didn't have to work as hard to keep the components cool. So now I have my computer on my desk next to me, which generally would bother me because it's like just droning.
Yeah.
But now that I've cleaned it, it's a little bit quieter. It doesn't bother me as much. So
it's quieter. It's cooler. Mm-hmm. It runs better and faster, and it'll last longer. Like, it sounds like there's no downside to this.
There's no downside. The only thing is it's a pain because, I mean, I would recommend even, too, if it's really bad, wearing a mask because that dust can be kind of toxic.
Not what you want to breathe in. But at the same time, like, the difference here is just don't be lazy. Just do it, basically.
Pretty much. Make it like a yearly routine around the summertime to do it because that's when your PC is going to be the most stressed, especially if you live in a home that doesn't have like AC or something like that.
Yeah.
Like I know you're from Phoenix.
I'm from Phoenix and you got AC everywhere, right. But you still had, it's also like the desert, it's dusty. You bring dust in. I mean, you got to keep your things clean. Now I'm in San Francisco where there's no AC, but because of that, we always have our windows open, mm-hmm. and my place still gets dusty, you know? Yeah. So it's like whether you're living in the heat or you're whether living in the cool, you got to keep it clean, man.
Keep
you
got to keep it clean. Keep it clean, yeah. And, it, you know, I like it just because it makes me organize things again, you know, tinker with stuff.
You know, this reminded me of the stories that we've seen recently with Xboxes and PlayStations and what, like bugs and roaches and things like that were nesting
that
inside
of it. That were getting inside of it,
Yeah, I don't know if Brooke can find that on the internet and show that, but the reason why that was happening is because consoles and PCs, as we saw with from the G Plus community there, these are dark, hot places. These are kind of primo breeding grounds for cockroaches. It's a place where they're going to want to hang out. It's a place where they're going to want to live. You know, it's dark. It's kind of like perfect for them. And you think about it, you know, like my consoles are in my TV stand. You
know what I'm saying? Which is already kind of a small space.
Exactly.
Right?
My PC that I'm using to power my VR headsets, that's like literally located to the left of my TV stand on the ground. I mean, you know, it's perfectly reachable for all of those little crawly critters, those creepy crawly critters. So that's even one more reason to do this. With that compressed air can, would it be safe to actually like just kind of put that through the little vents in your gaming console, or would you really want to deconstruct that as well?
That's a good question. I think as long as you're diligent about cleaning most of the dust that's around your console off, like if you ever see your TV stand getting kind of dusty, wipe all that down, because anything that you don't will probably get sucked into your console. Some consoles are easier to take apart than others. Like, I've taken apart my fair share of consoles. Like the 360 was a pain in the butt
was the worst
to take apart.
And if you took it apart, you can almost never get it back together. And it'd be all creaky and like not a good look.
And the plastic started to get old and brittle and you snap things. And a lot of these consoles, too, if you take them apart, you void the warranty on them. I'm fairly certain that my Xbox One is probably filthy inside of it. And that machine gets kind of hot. Eventually, I will probably take that apart to clean it. And same practices if you do take it apart to clean. Compressed air, you know, alcohol to wipe things down.
That being said, if you're still under warranty and your stuff's running hot, it's making a bunch of noise, and it's a console, take it back to where you got it from. Take it to, you know, the Best Buy Geek Squad. Whatever, and they can take that apart and then figure it out for you without voiding your warranty. So, yeah, this video here.
So, I mean, I think generally you'd be okay blowing compressed air into your console to kind of clear it out. But if you see a bunch of bug bodies in there,
like this fella's seeing,
you probably, if you use a compressed air, you're just launching the bodies into the console. So I don't know. I don't know if I'd recommend that.
So terrible. Although I really love what you're saying about keeping the environment around your machines clean, because where are they going to get all this stuff from? The environment around your machines. It makes perfect sense. Now, compressed air, there are some warnings, of course, on the cans and stuff like this. Like, let's talk a little bit about that. It's not the sort of thing you'd want to like spray like on like, you know, your little brother's face when he's sleeping, or the sort of thing that you'd want to spray on your arm. Like,
no.
You know, now, of course, like most people aren't going to do these things, but let's just talk about that, because it's not you have to be careful with how you use it too.
Well, okay, so the way I think of using compressed air is very much like the rifle from Halo. Short controlled bursts.
There you go.
Is the best way to do it, because if you just hold it down, it will, you know, it'll keep blowing, but it gets weaker and weaker as you hold it down, and you'll might notice that
gets really cold.
Yeah.
Whenever I use compressed air, I usually grab like a little microfiber cloth or even just like a couple paper towels, whatever, and I kind of like hold. It's almost like I'm pulling like something out of the oven. This is the you know, opposite of that, because it's cold. But it's like, it can get so damn cold that I want to protect my hand.
Well, and
which might be a little weird, but I'm, again, better safe than sorry.
Yeah, totally. But where you can get in trouble too is you always want to hold it straight up. If you hold it to the side or you hold it upside down, that's when the propellant will get really cold.
Yeah.
And you'll destroy things if you do that. So always hold it upright and facing towards what you want. Don't shoot people with it, no matter how much you might be tempted. There's also...
Or yourself.
Or yourself. Hey, did that guy finally clean his Xbox? Or he's gonna open it up. Gross.
It still looks pretty dirty. Skip to the bug part, Berg.
Yeah.
There are so many of these videos on the internet, and you know, we're showing them to you because they're funny and they're gross. But also, this backs up what he's saying. you got to keep it clean. Take care of this stuff.
Take care of your electronics, and they'll take care of you.
Nasty things could be happening.
Also, with the compressed air, that's why I had two of them. Because I would use one to do some general spraying, and then once it got kind of cold, and
switch it out. Know,
switch to the next one. So.
That's smart.
And just kind of rotate them in and out.
Very cool. Very cool.
So that's just a way of keeping your, not just your PC, think of your electronics in general that you might want to keep dust away from, and they'll live longer and they'll be happy. You know, they say electronics don't have feelings, but I'm pretty sure they do, and that makes them sad if they're too dusty.
Yeah, not a good look.
Well, cool. That should wrap up this episode. We learned PGP and how to send encrypted emails, and now you're going to keep all your electronics clean out there. Maybe some of you out there have some electronics that you've been ignoring that you now should give some attention. Maybe you could submit some before and after photos to our community over at G+. If you go to Google+ and you just search for the know-how community, you can join up. We have 11,000 members there. Take some before and after photos of your disgusting machine and share them there with everyone. It'll be fun. I would enjoy to see that, actually. And if you're good at cable management too, I'd like to see that. I'm a fan of like, I think there's actually a website where you can go and it's like just cable management photos.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like it's kind of cable porn. Yeah, exactly. It is cable porn.
That's one way of talking about it, I guess.
Yeah, Burke knows about it. When you see a nice server rack with all the Ethernets going at the same color, all going the same direction, I don't know, it's like Zen for me, like a Zen garden.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I even like to see it, you know, with my dad's a super motorhead, and I'm into cars because I got that sickness from him. And even seeing cars taken apart and seeing a nice cable system, there's aftermarket stuff. I think there's a company called Painless Wiring, you know, and you just see it on most cars. You take out the carpets and there's like cables everywhere. And, you know, it's not only pleasing to the eye, but I think it can help you avoid those problems. Like, you know, everyone talks about electrical problems as being gremlins. It's like, well, which one is it? Why is it this? Why is that?
And then you look at the hairball of cables that, like, they've created, and you're like, well, that could be
probably
it.
Probably because it's a mess, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And airflow matters.
So. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So I'm right there with you.
But if you want to contact us more directly, or actually, before I get to that, I should say, if you want to find any of the past episodes we've done or subscribe to the show, go to twit.tv/KH. You can subscribe to the show. You can download the episode. And if you've ever missed an episode, you can go through our back library of all the other episodes we've worked on. We've had a lot of fun doing this show. We appreciate everyone who watches. And the way you can support us is to subscribe. But otherwise, if you want to see what we're doing outside of know-how, you want to see how my computer is running, because I'm going to do some light overclocking now that I've got a clean PC and I've lowered my temps. I'm going to do a little bit more overclocking, try and squeeze a little bit more performance out of my PC. I'll probably post some results on Twitter, and you can follow me at @cranky_hippo.
And I'm on Twitter at @NateOG.
Cool. And then, of course, we couldn't have done the show without him. Burke, thank you for TDing tonight. I know Alex really didn't want to do it, so. Oh, he's going for the mic. You might hear a
voice. That's funny. This is Alex.
Oh.
Lies. Yeah. This is Burke.
Maybe I mispronounced Alex's name again.
It's Al.
Well, you do that all the time.
I do.
And hey, maybe, well, I guess Alex hasn't been shaving lately, so him and Burke, they do sit next to each other. They
have the same posture over there.
You know, too. It's kind of like when people buy a dog and then they're like, oh, the dog looks like the owner.
Yeah,
I think that's basically what Burke and Alex have going on. I'm just not sure which one's the dog and which one's the owner. I don't know. But
maybe they switch off.
I hate you both.
Well, we should probably end this show before Burke murders us on the air. So now that you know how to encrypt your emails and you know how to clean out your electronics, go do it. Boom. Done.